everybody. Welcome back to another episode of On The Mix. I am your host, Lindsay. And I thought that since a couple weeks ago, I did an episode talking all about the assassination of John Lennon, that it reminded me of another story that I don't really know if a lot of people know about, that centers around George Harrison and his wife, Olivia. So this is a really wild story, and it also, it's kind of like a bittersweet story because this takes place on New Year's Eve, 1999, and this was about 2 years before George Harrison dies. And I believe George Harrison dies at 58 years old, which is young, very young. So I just thought, why don't I just share the story about how George Harrison almost got assassinated himself many, many, many moons after John Lennon got assassinated. John Lennon's assassination actually kind of inspires George to up his security. And I think that's an extremely rational response to the horrific violence that took place around one of his best friends, right? So I'm not sure if Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr took the same precautions, I'd imagine that they would. But George, there was something about George and how he reacted to John Lennon's death specifically that made him really afraid for his life. He actually had some incidences prior to this one that I'm going to be talking about. In 1990, George was actually sent death threats to his home. And then in 1992, police found an obsessed fan lurking outside his house with the intention of arson, burning down his house. It's really not that far-fetched that George was so paranoid about John Lennon's murder and he thought, this could happen to me. We are not impervious to things happening to us in tragic ways. This could happen to me. And George, it's so crazy because George literally almost died at this particular event. So it's December 31st, 1999. It's 3:30 in the morning, roughly. Okay, it's New Year's Eve. George and his wife, Olivia, they're upstairs in their house, which, by the way, their house, their estate is called Friar Park. It's about a 34-acre property, which is massive. It almost looks like a castle. If you look at photographs of it, it's unbelievable what this intruder managed to do because he somehow found a way into the house. And I'll explain that in a second. But Friar Park is huge. So it literally looks like an English castle. Like, it's massive. It's huge. Like, dozens and dozens of rooms. Like, George implemented all of this security, like powerful lights, video cameras, razor wire fences, and electronically controlled gates. But unfortunately, this person, he is a 33-year-old Liverpudlian man. He is known as Michael Abrams. And I'm pretty sure that's the only time I'm going to reference him by name because he doesn't really deserve to be referenced by name like this. What happened was George and Olivia, they're upstairs sleeping, and Olivia's mother, who's visiting for the holiday, she is also in the house. She's in another room of the house. So it's the three of them. I don't know where George's son Danny was in all of this. It seems like he was not there for this attack, so I don't know where he was. He probably was with friends or something. Who knows, right? I'm not sure. But he was not there in the house. So this guy, this intruder, he comes upon Friar Park and he takes this statue of Saint Michael that Olivia made for George. And he took this massive statue and he threw the statue against a window, breaking this window. And he managed to scale the walls and climb in through this broken window. He evaded all the security systems. However, I do believe there is like one still image of this guy attempting to break into the house that I saw on a Beatles documentary. But he, yet again, he somehow like evaded all of these security measures that George put in place, right? So what ended up happening here was they hear this window being broken and Olivia was the first to rouse from the bed and she woke up George and she said, George, I just heard something in the house. And he said, well, what did you hear? And she said, I heard something like a window being broken in the house. So her first instinct, which is I think most people's first instinct, is to get up out of bed and lock the bedroom door. George, though. George, in this whole story, he is an absolute powerhouse of a person. He is so crazy and powerful with his mind that he had no fear, which is mad to me. So George asked her, why did you lock the door? And she says, well, because I'm scared. That's why I locked the door. And he says, no, I'm going out there. So he unlocked the bedroom door and he runs out of the room. And this is where he encounters this intruder. And this intruder was like talking to George. George was like, what do you want? The guy was like, you know what I want. You know why I'm here. You know, speaking very like he's not within his right state of mind. George does also another very interesting tactic to get this guy confused and to distract him and to lower his guard. He ends up shouting Hare Krishna at this guy. He's like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He got distracted enough to where Olivia comes out of nowhere and she tries to dissuade the robber, but the robber ends up pushing Olivia out of the way. And she doesn't see that this intruder is wielding a large 6 to 7 inch long knife. She only sees that he has a broken piece of the statue in his hand. She doesn't see that he's got a knife. So this guy hits Olivia over the head with that piece of the statue and Olivia gets knocked out. And then the intruder is on top of George. It's wild that this even happened, but this guy ends up stabbing George over 40 times and he ends up stabbing George in the chest. And so Olivia, as she's like knocked out and she's not like thinking in her right state of mind, she runs back into the bedroom and she's like thinking, okay, what the hell do I do? Of course, like I said, again, she does not know that this guy has a knife. She didn't see that he had a knife at all. So she doesn't know that George is being stabbed outside of the bedroom door. I just want to put that out there because I think maybe some people would criticize Olivia for running the opposite direction instead of charging this guy. But she ends up doing something really baller. So Olivia, she's thinking, what do I do? So she grabs the fire poker from their fireplace. And then she also grabs a lamp, but she first grabs this fire poker. And Olivia recants later on in an interview that she said she grabs the poker and she says, quote, my dad was a big baseball fan and he used to always say, follow through. That's all I could think of was don't hit like a girl, follow through. And so she does. So she's wielding this fire poker like a badass. And she is over and over and over again slamming this fire poker over this guy's head. And she says that his head started bleeding and trickling down his blonde hair. And like it looked like something crazy. So the man, though, didn't back down crazy enough. I don't know what the hell this guy was on. Like he was on a whole other planet. But this guy gets up off of George after he stabs George 40 times. And he then chases Olivia through the house, grabbing her eventually by the neck. So yet again, she does not see that he has a knife. She's just being chased around the house. This guy grabs her by the neck. Somehow, miraculously, like God was really on George's side tonight. He was like, no, this man is not dying tonight. So George managed to get up off the floor, charge the guy, and jump on the man's back. And then they all fell into a big pile on the floor. Olivia says that she managed to get out underneath the dog pile. And George somehow, while he's still bleeding profusely from the chest, after having endured 40 stab wounds to the chest, he pins the guy down on the floor and George ends up saying that he got the knife. So he somehow managed to get the knife away from this guy. George Harrison is an absolute hero. He's an absolute hero, and Olivia's actions this night completely saved both of them, 1,000,000%, but she saved George's life because if she hadn't have come through with the fire poker and distracted him while she had the chance, then George would have ended up dying horrifically that night. And what a really sad thing that Olivia said in this interview many years later, recanting this event, was she said that because George was so spiritual and he was so deep in his Buddhist beliefs, he had this notion of he wanted one thing out of life, and that was when the time came for him to die, that he wanted to die how he wanted to and leave his body how he wanted to peacefully. So she remembers him saying in the hospital later on while they're recovering from their wounds, he said to her essentially that he couldn't believe that he was dying in this tragic way, and that he said, if I have to die right now, then I have to accept that and be peaceful about it. So it's very sad that George just wanted to die peacefully and leave his body how he wanted, and yet he thought it was so visceral and so primal that he was dying, he thought, in this kind of horrific way. He said, George Harrison said later on, he said, quote, I felt exhausted and could feel the strength draining from me. I vividly remember a deliberate thrust to my chest. I could hear my lung exhaling and had blood in my mouth. I believed I had been fatally stabbed. I mean, that's horrific, truly. So somehow, of course, the police get called to Friar Park, and George is suffering from an extreme amount of wounds, and Olivia has her wounds as well. But what's really, again, so fascinating just about, I suppose, the tenacity and the sheer strength that George held in this moment, protecting not only himself, but his family, his wife, that he somehow manages to find humor in all of this. And I think that's just George right there. There was a really funny anecdote that Eric Idle, who is part of the British comedy group Monty Python, he was great friends with George Harrison. That's another story for another day, to be honest, because it's very interesting how deep the ties go with George to Monty Python. It's really interesting. Eric Idle recanted that he was in LA at the time and he heard of this incident. So he flew over to the UK as fast as he could. And he heard this story that while George and Olivia were being put on stretchers into the ambulance to go to the hospital, George was being taken to, and he was being looked after by some EMTs on the scene who had apparently just started working that weekend. So George ends up asking them, so what do you think of the job so far? Which is really, really funny. Like, there's another really funny line that George says here, and it's insane. Like, he was in so much pain. I mean, literally, you're stabbed in the chest over 40 times. He had a collapsed lung. Like, he was in rough shape, but according to all the articles that had come out at that time, it said his wounds and his injuries were non-life-threatening, of course, because he lives. He lives to tell the tale, and he lives to talk about it for 2 years before he ends up passing away. So George and Olivia were taken to the Royal Berkshire Hospital, and they were treated for their respective wounds. Of course, Olivia had some cuts and bruises, and she had her, I suppose you could call it a concussion. I would probably say that she did have some kind of concussion due to her being hit over the head by that piece of the statue that the intruder had on his arm, in his hand. George was treated for his collapsed lung and his 40 stab wounds, which was pretty horrific. He was taken into surgery, and he was being well looked after by the surgeon, William Fountain, who was his main surgeon. The surgeon said that George had a narrow escape that was little short of miraculous. He said that the knife barely missed piercing the superior vena cava, a vein that carries blood from the head, arms, and upper body to the heart. He says, quote, no stab wound to the chest is minor. In Mr. Harrison's case, it is just by chance that it is not particularly serious. So after George goes into surgery and he's laying in his hospital room with Olivia in another bed in the same room, he's being interviewed by the police, of course, because they have to conduct a thorough investigation as to what happened, who this person could have been, what the motive was for this, because they're thinking, the police were actually very confused as to like why this even happened. I remember seeing a clip of this one policeman being interviewed by a million reporters, and he was saying that he wasn't sure if it was a burglary, if it was an obsessed fan, like he just had no idea. They didn't know. It was early on in the case. They just had no idea. They didn't want to just like assume that it was a crazy fan and this was a targeted event. Like, they assumed it's George Harrison. It could have been a burglary gone wrong or something, you know, so they just didn't know what this was. But it's funny, because George said on his hospital bed as he was recovering, he said he certainly wasn't auditioning for the Traveling Wilburys, which at the time, the Traveling Wilburys was this supergroup that George was a part of with a bunch of other famous musicians, to the likes of Roy Orbison, Bob Dylan, Jeff Lynne, Tom Petty, and I feel like I'm missing somebody, and I'll be remiss if I truly did miss somebody. But anyway, so I thought that was a really funny anecdote. Like, he certainly wasn't auditioning for the Traveling Wilburys. Like, even in the middle of this horrific moment, George, I think, takes a bit of reprieve and he tries to find solace in humor. I think that's how he copes with traumatic things happening, or that's just one of his coping mechanisms, is to make light of it, to make a joke of it, because he really came close to death. While, of course, he was affected heavily from this, not only physically, but mentally and emotionally and spiritually at this point in time, he still managed to somehow find the humor in this and to be lighthearted and, you know, to think more positively about it. I mean, he's a beast. He literally got stabbed 40 times, a punctured lung, and yet he gets up from the floor and he jumps on this guy's back and he pins him to the ground and he takes the knife out of his hand and he pins him to the floor until police come. But that's so miraculous. Clearly, George Harrison was not meant to die this night. I guess not. So while George and Olivia were being treated for their injuries at the hospital, the intruder was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. So this is where now we kind of get a bigger picture of why this guy did what he did and like the mental state that this guy had. In an interview with the Liverpool Echo, his mother, the intruder's mother, said that her son was mentally ill and he was a former heroin addict who apparently hears voices in his head and he sees things emerging from walls. And she says that he apparently takes all music literally. Before, apparently, he had an obsession with the Beatles. He had an obsession with Oasis, which is funny. Oasis is a 90s Brit rock band that heavily are influenced by the Beatles. So it's really weird that he at first was really taken by Oasis. We would have had a much different story had this guy had been obsessed with Oasis and Liam Gallagher or Noel Gallagher was this guy's primary focus. But all of a sudden, it just came to be about the Beatles now. You know, there's no rhyme or reason to it, because there is no rhyme or reason when it comes to mental illness of this caliber, of course. Nothing makes sense. So that's just kind of the backstory of this person. And the following year, in November, in 2000, this guy went on trial for the attack. The case centered around whether his mental state at the time meant that he was not guilty by reason of insanity. So, like, you know, basically, was he guilty because he knew that this was a malicious attack and he knew what he was doing? Or is he not guilty because he's mentally ill and he is so far gone mentally that he was not in his right state of mind? So it's just a matter of, you know, which way you think. Both George and Olivia testified about their horrific experience. In a statement read aloud in court, George said that, quote, "There were times during the violent struggle that I truly believed that I was dying," end quote. Olivia also gave her testimony, saying that, quote, "There was blood on the walls and blood on the carpet, and this was the moment I realized that we were going to be murdered," end quote. Three psychiatrists assessed this man and found that he may have paranoid schizophrenia as well as a psychotic condition. And there isn't a whole lot of information to figure out exactly where this man is now, but as of that documentary that I watched on the Beatles that referenced this incident about George, it said that he went to a heavily guarded, locked down psychiatric hospital, but I couldn't really find any solid information to say where he is now. That's just where he was at the time, so that's where he ended up. Unfortunately, because I think this guy really did deserve prison time, because he literally was full-on murdering another person, even though he wasn't in his right mental state, I think, still. At least after being looked after in the hospital, then put this guy in prison. I don't know. That was essentially that, and that's where it ended there. So while this was all happening, both Ringo and Paul gave their own statements. Paul said, quote, "Thank God both George and Olivia are all right. I send them my love." And Ringo at the time was living in California, where he still lives. Ringo and his wife, Barbara, were deeply shocked, and they said, quote, We send George and Olivia all our love and wish George a speedy recovery. Beatles producer George Martin also said that he was appalled by this attack. He was alive at this time. He says, quote, George leads a very quiet life. He's very much a down-to-earth person and likes nothing more than doing his garden, end quote. Which is true. People were very shocked that this was centered around George Harrison. But at the same time, similarly in vain, people were shocked that John Lennon was the focal point for Mark David Chapman's vendetta against him. They were very confused because George Harrison and John Lennon are very similar in how they preach about, you know, the good word of peace and love and respect one another and, you know, the vocal about, what at least John was, about humanitarian things and human rights and, you know, and religion and things of that kind of nature, you know, so I suppose maybe they ruffled a couple people's feathers, of course, because John was going to be booted out of America because Nixon did not want to give him his green card. So they were very adamant about John Lennon not staying in America. But George was in the UK where he was perfectly fine, even though, of course, he had years prior to this event some instances regarding his safety when it came to crazed, obsessed fans. I have never really heard stories like this revolving around Paul or Ringo from what I can recall off the top of my head. If any of you guys happen to know, please let me know on Instagram. I also have Threads. I just created a Threads account for the podcast, so follow me on there and we can talk about it. It's crazy because none of the other Beatle members from my recollection ever had a run-in with a crazed fan like this before. It was only George and John, so I don't know what that says, but I think it could correlate to some effect of they're just vocal people, like that just are very strongly centered in their beliefs, and you know, that can ruffle some people's feathers. So unfortunately, George almost died this night, but he survived. What's so tragic though, George Harrison was no stranger to ailing health though, because prior to this event, he had cancer, lung cancer, and he was treated. He seemed to be in remission during the time that this happened. So he was in remission from his first round of cancer. And I say first because unfortunately, he had a second round of cancer that came back and even stronger. So it's really, really tragic. I believe it started out as lung cancer and then it traveled to his brain. And they were trying to find some kind of cure. From what I understand as well, they were trying to do experimental treatments and cures for cancer on George at this time. And they had a really horrific doctor at the end of George's life that used him for fame and for money. Because while George was so weak and frail and tired to the point where he couldn't even write his own name anymore, this doctor asked George to sign a guitar for him. And he had like his young sons with him, this doctor. He had his young sons with him. Apparently he was at George's house. He asked George to sign this guitar. And he put the pen in George's hand and signed his autograph. And that's horrific. But after George's passing, they did take him to court and that was settled. So I just wanted to put that out there because it's horrific what happened to George. He was taken advantage of by the people that were trying to take care of him and look after him. People closely connected to George, like his family, his friends, they all thought 100% that he ended up getting cancer for a second time due to the stress that was from this horrific almost assassination attempt. And that makes sense. Stress can exacerbate cancer. It can exacerbate issues already present within the body. He was in remission from cancer, so he needed to be stress-free and living life, you know, with ease and without any kind of drama. And unfortunately, this ends up happening. His son Danny actually says a very poignant and really, like, really sorrowful quote from this documentary. He says, quote, he was very, very badly attacked. And by the time he died, he didn't even have a single scar on him. He was like a yogi. He moved on from that physically and mentally and didn't let it affect him. But it definitely took years off of his life, you know? If you're trying to fight cancer and then you're trying to stay alive from something like that, it's got to take it out of you, end quote. So it's really tragic that not only does this happen to him, but he got a second round of cancer that ended up killing him sometime later. So it's sad, like, this ends up happening at the very end of 1999. In the year 2000, you know, the following year was when they had the trial. So he was thinking about this for the, you know, for all those months leading up to it. And then he died the following year in November 2001 on the 29th. It's quite sad, you know, it's quite sad because he didn't deserve to die that young. He was very, very young. But I guess the positivity that can come from this is that now at this point, when he does finally pass away in the year 2001, he died the way that he wanted to when he left his body peacefully, how he wanted to, which was so hugely important to him. And it was why he did what he did with spirituality. He was looking for all these answers out of life from religion and from spirituality, from Buddhism, you know, and from Hindu practices that he so hugely benefited from, because he was almost like reborn as a new person when he started experimenting with spirituality in the mid 60s, probably around 65 or 6 at the earliest. So he died in this property belonging to Paul McCartney on Heather Road in Beverly Hills, Los Angeles. And he was with his wife, he was with his son, he was with a couple of his Buddhist friends, and they were chanting Hindu scripture at him while he was in bed, which meant a lot to him. And according to a statement made by Olivia and his son Danny, George's final message was, quote, "Everything else can wait, but the search for God cannot wait, and love one another." Very, very beautiful last message from George there. I did want to say this quote that George gave in this documentary recanting about this incident that happened to him, because it shows the caliber of the kind of man that he was. He was so humble and so easygoing and so down to earth, but so strong and powerful and so peaceful and tranquil at the same time. So he said, quote, "I had an experience which speeds up the whole idea of, you know, if you have something happen to you physically, then people can go in the hospital or have something wrong with them and have a shock or something like that. And then you think, wow, I could be dying right now. If I was dying now, what would I think? What would I miss? If I had to leave my body in an hour's time, what is it that I would miss? And I think, well, I've got a son who needs a father, so I have to stick around for him for as long as I can. But other than that, I can't think of much reason to be here," end quote. George lived for his family. He lived for his son, for his wife, and he lived life how he wanted to live it. And he lived it peacefully. And he died of his own terms. I'm so thankful that he did not die in that tragic, horrific way, because that would have been two Beatles that had died horrifically of such tragic ways. Their life literally being taken away from them by another person so viscerally, you know? Like, George was disgusted by this notion of, wow, I'm literally being taken out of my body right now in a way that I don't like and I don't appreciate. This disgusting, despicable human being is violently taking my life away from me. Well, that was not meant to happen to George that day. It's truly a blessing that he did pass away with his family in a loving way, in a peaceful manner, when it was his proper time to go. It's very unfortunate that this incident did, I think, propel his death faster, because I believe if this event hadn't have happened, who knows if he would have gotten cancer for a second time. But unfortunately, that horrific event like stuck with him. And I, again, don't think most people know about that event. Maybe massive, massive Beatles fans like me would know about this. But then again, like I said, I'm really not sure if Paul or Ringo had an event like this. I truly don't think that that happened. I could be wrong, and I'm willing to look to see if there are any events. And again, let me know if you happen to know of any events that revolve around Paul and Ringo with crazed fans of this kind of caliber. But I don't think from my memory that that's the case. But yeah, just ending it more on a happy note, I'm just glad that, you know, at the end of the day, that George died peacefully when it was his time, and he left his body how he wanted to live it. And I'm sure he's in a much better, happier, more peaceful place. So I'm going to leave it there. Thank you guys for listening. I hope that you learned something today that you hadn't known about before. Yet again, I am on Threads. If you have Threads, the app, you can follow the podcast on there. It's like Twitter. I don't have Twitter for the podcast. So if you like Threads and you're seeing what it's all about, follow me on there. And I also have an Instagram if you prefer Instagram, where, of course, I update you guys about the podcast, and I do polls occasionally on topics. So if you want to get into all of that stuff, then you can follow me on there. It's On The Mix Podcast on both platforms. So thank you guys very much for listening. I hope that you guys have a wonderful rest of your day, and I'll see you guys next Wednesday with another episode of On The Mix. Talk to you guys later. Bye, guys.